all the work is in physically, now it's time to get mentally right, and it's time to continue to eat right. We'll talk to the man who's in charge of feeding the Tigers. Saints got to cut down to 53 by Saturday. What are we watching for Thursday against the Dolphins? And we'll go around the college football world, Hump Day with Huguenin, today, Wednesday, August 28th, 2019.
You know, when you look at decades, and for the Patriots, of course, it's been two decades. The Steelers, obviously, they won four in the 70s, two more since. Patriots have owned the 21st century. You know, for us on opening night to have Pittsburgh and New England and the only two teams to win six, that's really special.
Player A has these strengths and weaknesses. Player B has these strengths and weaknesses. And as an organization, we have to do what we think is best for the team. We go with one, and here's a good, here's a bad. You go with the other, here's a good, here's a bad. Well, what's best for the entire unit? And that's at every position, not just quarterback.
We've got a marathon here, and we won't zig when we get to the playoffs. We won't zig when we're in the dog days of this season. And you have to manage a player the caliber of Zeke. And so a fresh Zeke as we got on into the end of the season would be great.
I feel like he's a player that that feels like he can make a significant return on every play. I know our bench feels that way. If you watch the one the other night, you know, I think the team feels like, man, on any return, it's been close. So you can only go by what you see. And I don't think it's too big for him. You know, I don't think it's too big for him.
You know, I didn't really think it was warranted. You know, I think as an umpire, I think Pat needs to understand that this is an emotional game. I mean, sometimes when things don't go your way, you kind of let the umpire know it.
Some of the sounds from around the sporting world. That was Justin Verlander, got the heave-ho, even though the Astros with a big win last night. Sean Payton talking about his return specialist, Deontay Harris. Jerry Jones talking about, hey, you know, if Zeke doesn't want to sign now, it may not be a bad thing. We want Zeke when we get to the playoffs. Holy cow. And Al Michaels talking about the NFL season as well. Good afternoon. Welcome, everyone. It's Wednesday. We've climbed to the top of the mountain, and now we're getting ready tomorrow to head downhill for the season openers for the Tigers in Death Valley. The Cajuns in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome will know by the weekend what the 53-man roster looks like for the Saints. But we begin today with the biggest news in college football, and that has to deal with former Baton Rougean, current star linebacker for the Alabama Crimson Tide, Dylan Moses, preseason All-American. Their best defensive player tears his ACL, in all likelihood done for the season. The next time we may see Dylan Moses is after he rehabs, declares for the NFL draft, and goes and signs with some NFL team. So a big, big blow for the Crimson Tide. Big blow for them. And we wish him nothing but that. I don't want to see that happen to anyone. I really, really don't. Remember the story with Dylan Moses. He left university lab school right in the backyard of LSU, went to IMG, came out later and said he was going to go to LSU if Les Miles were still the head football coach. Les wasn't. He went to Alabama, part of that great defense, and has become a star for them. Their leading returning tackler, but now he is out. Also, it came out today that four Alabama players will be suspended for the first half against Duke. It doesn't matter. It's not going to determine the outcome of the game, but it gives a message. It tells you something. Najee Harris and Brian Robinson, running backs number one and number two, missed a meeting. They will be suspended for the first half. The guy that caught the touchdown pass to win the national championship, Devontae Smith, a Louisiana native, suspended for the first half, as is linebacker Terrell Lewis. Is there a chink in the armor? Is there? I don't know. But it just made me think a little bit about Monday's press luncheon. And during that press luncheon, head coach Ed Orgeron was specifically asked a question, and I'm going to read the question to you verbatim, and then you can listen to his answer. Question was, you also have had, knock on wood, you see problems with players getting in trouble everywhere else. You haven't had anything like that. How much does that reflect the attitude of this team? Listen to Ed's response.
I do believe the culture has changed. No, it's not all the way where we want it. In recruiting, we recruit character. We tell our team that character counts. Do the right thing. Protect the team. And so far, it's been really good.
So far, really, really good. Look, there's been some people calling me and asking me about it. There are going to be some players suspended in this game. 2 years ago, there were rumblings of suspensions, and Coach O stated he didn't want to announce such things before games and explain that it's all because he doesn't want to give the competitor an advantage. That year, fans and the media were surprised to find out that 13 players were suspended for the season opener against BYU. I'm not saying that's going to happen this year, hoping that it isn't. But if there are, we won't know before game day. So here's hoping that we don't have any of those surprises this year. The big stat line to remember about the Eagles of Georgia Southern, they won 10 games a year ago. They were a plus 22 in turnover margin, the best in the country. They averaged 30 points, a run-dominated offense, 266 yards per game on the ground, only 79 yards per game in the air. Five starters return on offense, seven on defense. Their best player, senior cornerback Kendall Vildor, a preseason second team All-American. Look, history tells you, Georgia Southern's had some success. They did beat Florida down in the swamp. Florida, under Will Muschamp, wasn't a good team, but they still went into the swamp and beat them. They took Georgia to overtime in Athens. Okay, and they beat an Ole Miss Rebel team that wasn't very good either. But still, they won. So LSU can't take anything for granted on this one in any way, shape, or form. And I don't think they will. Let me tell you what we have on the guest list for you today. He's the executive chef of LSU Tiger Athletics. What does it take to feed an army every day, three times a day? Michael Johnson will join us and tell us exactly what his job is like each and every day. Chris Truax will join us as he does each and every Wednesday. We'll put our hand in the dirt, get his thoughts about the offensive line depth, and what he expects. What are his goals? Yeah, you want to win the game, obviously. But other than that, what are his goals and expectations for LSU versus Georgia Southern? Hour number two, Hot Topics, as always, kicks things off. John Hendricks, Canal Street Chronicles, Forbes Sports will join us to talk about the New Orleans Saints. And then, of course, Hump Day with Huguenin. Michael Huguenin of The Athletic will join us, and we'll pick some winners of some very, very interesting Week 1 college football games, including Utah at BYU, Oklahoma and Houston, Oregon and Auburn, and others. So that's what we have in store for you and yours. We're brought to you each and every day by ShopRite, Tobacco Plus, Discount Outlets, 60-plus in southern and central Louisiana. They've got everything. It is so much fun going into their stores. They have great discounts, great prices on everything. You want to get stuff for your tailgating weekend, your Labor Day weekend? ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets has everything you need. They really do. Food ready to roll, every drink, every beverage, anything you need. Knickknacks, they've got it all. Curios, they've got it all. Man, if you can't shop right at ShopRite, seriously, you just can't shop right at all. What's on the menu for dinner tonight? Well, we'll find out what the LSU athletes are eating when Michael Johnson joins us next here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, we welcome you back on this Wednesday edition. We talk about the players. You know, they lift weights, they run, they do their training. They have the new sleep pods in the locker room. They've got all the comforts of the world, but more importantly than anything is their nutrition. And what does it take to feed an army three times a day, every day? Well, we've got the executive chef in charge of just that with a great support staff, Michael Johnson, kind enough to join us. Chef Johnson, good afternoon, buddy. Did you make it through the lunch rush?
Well, we did, yeah. You know, I also say it was nice to see you at the Mikey Awards the other night. It was fun.
Yeah, that was fun. You make a great fried chicken sandwich. It competes with all those other franchises. So that was job well done. Okay, you're a chef. Why did you want this job?
You know, honestly, the attraction to Southern Louisiana was my children were down here, and I was looking for something to move back down here. And it was just kind of a twist of fate, honestly, that I landed in this job. You know, LSU was in need of a chef that had nutrition background, and I was a nutrition background in need of a job in Baton Rouge. And you know, it was the stars aligned, I suppose you'd say.
Timing is everything. So the biggest challenge, I would think, is you've got a myriad of athletes. Some need to gain weight. Some need to lose weight. I mean, you've got to touch on every dietary factor out there, I believe.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, I think that's part of the neat part of the job is, you know, from the different types of body types that we deal with, it creates the need for creativity in the kitchen. And, you know, every meal is different. From breakfast to lunch to dinner, every day is different from Monday to Tuesday to Wednesday. And so, you know, it keeps us on our toes. We are constantly having to be creative, you know, and, you know, you don't see the same meal twice in the same day or in the same week. We're on a 4-week cycling menu that, you know, for the first year, we're going to try out as many new foods as we can and see what they like, see what they don't like, see what's working and what's not working. And, you know, on a week-to-week basis, the nutritionist and I and our staff here, we touch base and download on, you know, what's working. So it's pretty neat.
Got to be communication's got to be the essence of everything. Do they tell you player by player, look, this guy, we need to, you know, how do you do it?
You know, the nutritionists are here for every meal and they touch with every player. And then they kind of give me, we don't steer the ship too drastically. We just make sure that we have a variety of foods, colors, textures, you know, lean, you know, there's lean foods, there's fatty foods, because each different person needs something different. So variety is everything for us. So, you know, from the salad bar all the way over to the carving board, there's just a variety of colors and foods and nutritional elements there that are offerings.
So let's say I'm coming to dinner tonight. What are my offerings going to be tonight?
You know, like on the lighter end of things, we're doing grilled watermelon with a little arugula salad on it, with balsamic arugula salad instead of cheese. On the other end, we're carving flank steak with fajita vegetables. You know, every day we have a new pizza, which we will this evening. We have a pasta station as well that we do fresh pastas every day. You know, I mean, it's pretty elaborate.
Holy cow. I know the team stays at Live Cook for the night before games. Are you involved with the pregame meals, per se?
At this point, I am not. I'm not sure whether I should expect to or not. although it sounds like I may travel with the team on away games to go and inspect food, make sure that the food there is nutritious and of sound quality, to make sure that the team is getting fed well on the road as well. So that's pretty interesting. Yeah.
I mean, this is the new way of things, you know. This is, these are finely tuned athletes, and they need to have the proper nutrition. How many calories do you think a football player consumes in a day?
God, I bet some of these guys consume upwards of 7,000 or 8,000 calories. To be honest with you,
holy cow. That is absolutely remarkable. How's the dessert menu looking these days?
Yeah, we keep the sweets on the lighter end of things. Sugar is not necessarily something that's good for the diet in our world. So we throw them a bone every once in a while and put some lighter sweets out there. But we try to find alternatives to the sweets. You know, like instead of using sugar, I'll use maple sugar. Instead of using sugar, we'll use local honey. You know, things that are processed differently and healthier for the body. You know, so we look for alternatives to get introduced to sugars and fruits and stuff like that have natural sugars are always a good alternative. So, you know, we try to balance it out and give them alternatives.
Michael Johnson, the executive chef for LSU Tiger Athletics, going in, how many people do you expect to feed per meal per day?
You know, it's an interesting question. Right now, it's kind of a guessing game. It's because school's just started and everything is very new. You know, lunch is turning out to about a couple hundred people. We expect that it will pick up. Dinner is 300 to 400 people right now. We expect that to pick up. Everybody's giving us good positive feedback, which means people are going out and talking about it amongst the other athletes, and we expect that will gain steam. And you know, there's possibility once staff and everybody all in, it could be upwards of 500 or 600 people a day per meal.
Holy, per meal. That's unbelievable. I guess I marvel at how you know how much food to order on a given day, each and every day. That's the science of it, isn't it?
It really is. You know, I've been in the business for 30 years, and you know, there's a lot of guesswork involved, but it comes from the gut. You know, you can kind of tell if it's going to be a good menu item or not. You know, there's vegetables and stuff are kind of slow movers. The salad bar, the gymnasts like, and the soccer team likes, and the carved meats, you know, the football players like. So there is some prediction to it.
See, it's those greens, I'm telling you. If they could just make it a different color, maybe people would eat more of it. But I don't understand. What is your signature dish? Have you put it out there yet?
Oh, gosh, that's tough to do. You know, I'm a sustainably minded guy, so anything farm to table, anything that can come from local and have a minimal twist on it. You know, like I like fruits and vegetables and meats to be as raw state as they are, you know, with very little manipulation and taste the food. And I think that's where my passion lies, is bringing in sustainable ingredients that are local and high quality.
Michael Johnson, executive chef for LSU Tiger Athletics, kind enough to join us. Let's talk about your staff. You've got, I'm sure you have a plethora of people helping you. How many and man, what do they all do?
You know, all in, I mean, we've got people that are really willing to work, honestly, and going into it, we kind of ask our people to be willing to do anything. I think the back of the house, our total number all in is going to be around 25 or 30. That's over three shifts, obviously. The front of house, that probably has another 15 or 20 with over three shifts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a constant change of guard, so to speak. Moving in, moving out, keeping them all organized. And, you know, it's a efficiently run kitchen. It's built around the idea of the galley of a ship, if you will. It needs to be efficiently run. You know, the walk-ins are close by, the storage is close by.
Yep.
And, you know, so we turn and burn constantly.
I mean, and you've got to work around class schedules, practice schedules. So when do you open up for breakfast and when do you finally turn the lights out?
You know, I was reporting in here at 4 o'clock every morning for a little while until I got my balance. We start serving athletes at 7 a.m. We serve them breakfast until 9, kind of a lighter end breakfast. We close the doors until 11 and open up at 11 until 2, and we close again, and then we open up back up at 5, and we close around 8, depending on, you know, when coach lets the guys out for, usually football is the last to report in for mm-hmm. dinner. So it just depends on when they report in. We're not going to close the doors and turn them away. We just kind of wait until they get here. So we want to make sure everybody gets fed.
And I love, Michael, that Coach O explained to his team, look, this is your home. We want to treat it like our home. We want to be respectful. We want to take care of this so that players years to come will have nice things as well. And I'm sure you appreciated that one, too.
Absolutely. You know, and Coach O is good for feedback. You know, he gives me and the team honest feedback, and you know, if he has any concerns, he says so. And if he has any compliments, he says so. I really appreciate that about him. And I think that he's offering that to the athletes as well as to what the expectations are. And expectations are good for business.
Well, Michael Johnson, you have a task. Is this 7 days a week, or are you shut down on Sunday?
So we, through training camp, we were 7 days a week. My staff and I are actually going on somewhere in the neighborhood of 45 or 50 days of 12 to 18-hour days. So we're looking forward to this weekend.
Wow.
Yeah. But we moved to 5 days a week after this. So
I bet you are.
Yeah.
Okay, 5 days.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Very good. Well, Michael, it was a pleasure meeting you. Look, if you can sneak me in the back door, man, I'd love to come in there and eat one time and see what you got. But all kidding aside, great job. Yep. Congratulations on getting the gig. The stars did line up right, but LSU certainly got the better end of the deal here with you. So feed them good, big guy, all day, every day.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care, Jordy.
All right, Michael, take care. That's Michael Johnson, the executive chef. Can you imagine that? 500 people a day, 3 meals a day. Jeez, can you imagine? With a variety. Some people need to gain, some people need to lose, some people need to maintain. And they have to offer all of that. Wow. It's a beautiful facility, I'll tell you that much. It really is. All right, enough about the food. The big uglies are coming up next. Offensive line talk and this LSU football team. We'll go with our hand in the dirt with Chris Truax next.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers, and it's right here on the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, we're back. Wednesday, that means it's time to put our hand in the dirt and find out the lowdown on the Tigers and their next opponent, brought to you each and every Wednesday by True Lodging RV Park. If you're looking for the perfect RV park, look no further than Hackberry, Louisiana in Cameron Parish, a 49-pad RV park with green space for your pets, laundry facility, Wi-Fi, security cameras. If you want to hunt, if you want to fish and get away from it all, that's the place to go. True Lodging RV Park, Hackberry, Louisiana. And our guest happens to be the boss there, and that is former LSU Tiger, the great Chris Truax. Coach Truax, wow. How are you, buddy?
What an intro, my friend. I'm doing fantastic. Hope you can hear me better this week, man. I got a calm, quiet place for you. Got off the road, and where you can focus, and we can talk a little bit more. I appreciate you having me on.
Always a pleasure. Not only was he a heck of an offensive lineman, but he coached for many, many years, so he knows the game of football, and that's why I love having you. The depth chart came out, and that's what always interests me about the first game. Who's the starters? Who's the backups? Lloyd Cushenberry obviously starting at the center position. I'm really curious about the left guard because it's one of those ors. Adrian McGee, who's been there for most of camp, or Chasen Hines, who's missed most of camp. Does that mean they're really high on Chasen Hines, or does that mean that Adrian McGee may not be that good? What do you make out of that?
Jordan, last year, Chasen Hines jumped into the starting rotation for LSU, and he was one of the most impressive young offensive linemen I've seen in a long time. The kid's definitely got the ability now. He's probably got a little bit more maturity under his belt. McGee's a seasoned player, too, so I don't think you're missing at either spot, which is good, because, you know, when I look at the starting five, I like the left tackle. I think we're solid at left guard. I think we're really good at center. I think we're really good at right guard. The enigma for me this year so far will be the right tackle spot. You know, you've got Declius Kidd over there, and I don't know how to say the young man's name, Tredora. I'm the young man, the junior college kid from New York that was
Adora Traore.
There you go. He was number one JUCO offensive tackle in the country out of ASA, out of New York, and has come down and, has not really fit the billing yet and really stepped up to earn that starting job yet. And that's what's tough when you sign a junior college kid, that if they come, basically you've got 2 years with them and you get them in there and they don't start, it might be better just bring in a redshirt him. Now you got 4 years instead of maybe possibly getting 1 year of production out of a player. But I saw the depth chart the other day as well, too, and like the group, got some depth and maturity, and like we talked about last week, like Lloyd Cushenberry right there, has really developed into a premier center in the SEC.
How much do you offensive linemen love it when you have a tight end who can really block? And it's, I think that's the difference. Thaddeus Moss, Stephon Sullivan. Sullivan more of that hybrid tight end. He's going to catch more passes, going to split them out a little bit. Moss can catch it, but he can also block as well. How important is the tight end to that offensive line?
Well, you know what? It's going to be interesting to see what we're going to see here this Saturday, Jordan. I've been out to one practice where they've mixed the tight end in, and they flexed them out, put them in motion. They ask a lot of our tight ends, which I like to do, because when you're game planning an offense, he's just not a blocker. Our tight ends have a vertical threat with them. Obviously, there's a lot of flats, a lot of shallow crossing patterns and so forth. But I'm curious to see kind of how this game unfolds, how our tight ends fit the mold and kind of in the spread offense and in the run pass offense, so I think we've got two good ones. Obviously, short yardage goal line. You've got two dependable kids. I know Moss has had a little injury laden in the past too, and like you said, Sullivan, I think, can really stretch your safety. So when you get a big body kid too, that they're going to have to, maybe defend him a different way as far as covering him up in the line of scrimmage, or having a linebacker jam him before he gets to the secondary, because he just got great body presence. And you go high catch the ball up there, that I think he'll win a lot of those competitive balls.
Chris Truax, kind enough to join us. You played, you coached. You and I watched the opener with Florida and Miami. A lot of penalties, and I was amazed at the poor tackling. Is that something coaches don't practice tackling anymore because they're afraid of getting injuries? Look, Dylan Moses from Alabama, done for the year with a torn ACL. Is that why the tackling is so bad?
Well, I just think it's fundamentals. You've got to teach them, preach them, and you work on them. Now, you work on those religiously. They'll be working on them all the way through pregame. And I don't think Florida, especially, we saw in their secondary, they weren't very physical, and they didn't look like they liked contact. So, I know Florida's defensive coordinator is very well respected. He's probably shaking his head and scratching his head a little bit, looking for the next idea in that meeting room on Sunday morning, going, okay, guys, everybody saw some weaknesses right here. And they're going to try to exploit it somehow, and then both sides too. That the penalties, that's always a discipline and so forth, and just beating yourself mentally. You can't do that in a tight ball game. You know, that was a tight ball game. And,
yeah.
You know, and then nobody wanted to establish the running game either. You know, we talked about it earlier. You know, everybody was weak on the perimeter, and that's where a lot of the plays were happening, were on the perimeter. It looked like Miami's quarterback settled down a little bit. And if the parity's there for an unranked Miami Hurricanes team to a number 8 Florida Gators team, and we saw the same thing, and America
right.
saw the same thing, that's why, you know, these preseason rankings, to me, I'd rather at least wait till after week 2 to let it kind of all shake out and really see how it's all defined.
I'm with you. Chris Truax here, brought to you by True RV Park in Hackberry, Louisiana. Hunting, fishing, Mecca, capital of the world, right there. Look, we talk about balance, and Coach O talks about wanting to have balance on offense, and that's fine and dandy if you want to get 50 run, 50 pass percentage-wise. But even in the passing, last year, every pass seemed to be predicated and geared toward Justin Jefferson. So where there might be some balance, it was heavily laden to one wide receiver. So to me, I want to see balance. And Joe Brady talks about everybody eats. That's what I'm really curious to see, how well we spread the football out to all the talent at the skill positions that we have.
Jordan, you know, it looks good on paper, doesn't it? Especially at the wide receiver position. Good Lord. I mean, we've got some too deep at four wide position, and the guys have had good production throughout the years. You know, it's funny, you go back and you look at this month's Sports Illustrated. I think it's this month's Sports Illustrated. You know, they got both Landry and Odell Beckham on the cover of it. Both two prolific NFL receivers. But when they played at LSU, we had no passing game. You know,
right.
It always blows my mind. It blows my mind. We get these great receivers in there, but they ain't catching many balls. So I think now they're able to spend that with the addition of the new passing game coordinator, you know, comes over from the Saints.
Yeah.
That I think it's going to be a lot of high completion rates, because I think there'll be a lot of shallow underneath throws, because you want your athletes in space with the ball in their hands as fast as they can get them. And we all know LSU's got plenty of athletes, and that'll also make the safeties cheat down and tighten up the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And once they do that a little bit, they try to get the vertical passing game, go over their heads in one-on-one matchups. But I like the way our receivers are looking.
I'm with you. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Chris Truax, kind enough to join us. Take me into the coaching room, because so many people ask me, and I'm not a believer of this. So many people say, we don't want to show everything that we've got against Georgia Southern because we got Texas next week. I say baloney. I mean, you are who you are. You're trying to establish an identity. You've got a new offensive philosophy with the RPO. You said you want to go an 11 set with one tight end, one running back, a bunch of wide receivers. Take me inside the coaching room. Does that stuff go on with, we don't want to tip our hat. We don't want to show too much.
Well, you know what? It's really an interesting question, especially this week versus Georgia Southern, Jordan. Because Georgia Southern runs triple option, old school triple option football, and they work the clock a lot like, you know, Georgia Tech in a 40-second play clock.
Yes.
And they're snapping the ball. So, you know, offenses usually get about 7 possessions a half, maybe 6 to 7. So let's call it 14 for the game. But what happens is you can find, you know, an option team that's going to milk the clock and run the football. And now you're going 3 and out maybe once or twice, and, you know, and now that team slowed it down. They're 1 or 2 ahead of you. They do what they do, and they might be forcing you to do something you don't want to do. So I think, you know, that kind of game time management will be really big this week, because, you know, Georgia Southern's got – they're an established – won a bunch of national championships under Eric Russell, and, you know, they won 9 or 10 games last year, won their bowl game. And so they're no sleeper. You better be respected. So, you know, for LSU's matchups, I assume personnel-wise, our personnel are probably better at every position. You know, under Georgia Southern, I think their quarterback might have had some personal issues off the field this offseason that I don't know who's going to show up for that quarterback spot for Georgia Southern. But, you know, as far as, showing everything, you know, football's not complicated. all these tricks and things that people have done that. You know, Al Davis has been doing that stuff back with the Raiders since the 70s. You can, you know, all the stuff's been done. It's just really kind of seeing how coaches call a game plan and manage their game plan.
Okay.
And I think,
yeah,
you know, the Tom Herman at UT knows Dave Aranda. They're buddies. They've worked together. They've coached against each other, so he knows how he manages. But I think that it'll be the biggest thing will be for defensive coordinators to see how our offense manages the game. You know, it's kind of like
right.
What was a nice surprise of the day watching University of Florida play. You know, were they 4-for-4 on fourth downs?
Pretty close, yeah.
I think so. And they had the fake punt right there, which really got
yep.
that. So I guarantee defense coordinators just went, oh, my God, we got to worry about fourth and short now, too. And said, oh, get the punt team ready, you know. That's what it is. Just seeing how coaches are going to – how to call their game in certain situations or backed up on the plus side or on the short side of the field. And I'm curious. I'm interested in seeing that as well.
Chris Truex, kind enough to join us. I'm a believer. Look, triple option, you don't see it very much. I'm glad LSU's playing a triple option team game one rather than game eight, because you got a lot of time to prepare for it. Game eight, you're playing between two SEC schools. You don't have much time to prepare for it.
Well, you know, besides that, I mean, you know, people are, you know, maybe a little disgruntled with Georgia Southern coming to town, but people need to do a little research on Georgia Southern, realize, you know, what kind of lineage they have there. Obviously, you have FCS, Northwestern State, coming to town, which is great to keep the money in the state. I love that.
Right.
Then
you
got Utah State coming to town. Tell you something, Utah State, I don't know if they won their cups or not, but that's another 9 or 10 win team that has won a lot of big games as well. So they might not have strong name recognition, but they have a strong football presence out there. I'm kind of looking forward to our schedule. But besides, you know, the conference speaks for itself, and going to Austin speaks for itself.
When you coach, were you down on the field or were you up in the press box? And what is the biggest difference? Because all the defensive coaches will be down on the field. Steve Ensminger, Joe Brady, the offensive mind trust, will be up in the press box. Is that do we read anything into that?
No. I like the way that's set up. And I think you've got to be comfortable where you are as a coach. You've got to be able to communicate with the players. You've got to have good eyes up in the press box as well, too. You know, they've got so many analysts now. Good Lord, they're going to be able to tell you how many laces are on the football, you know. And when these players come off the side, they've got to be able to find a coach and have dialogue with them, communicate them with. And sometimes, you know, coaches are assigned the front side of the play, the back side of the play, the wide side of the field, the short side of the field. You're specifically a first down, a second down, or a third down coach. We'll give us a thought. You're our short yardage guy. Is it really fourth and one, or is it fourth and two? You know, there's all kinds of little things coaches can have assignments. And when that moment's called, that coach better be on point, because I think that happens a lot. You know, you've got the whole coaching staff. You've got all these analysts, and hey, you still your clock's going. Let's make a call.
Yeah,
you know, and
that's right.
So I like the fact that we've got an experienced staff of guys that have worked together. And I think the clock management also is going to be a big role in this game, especially versus a team like Georgia Southern.
When I coached or played, I was always worried about, man, how are we going to look in that first game? Are we going to look like we know what we're doing? Are we going to look like we're supposed to be? So false starts and fumbles and penalties and drops, those kind of things, we saw that very prevalent in week zero. I'm hoping LSU plays as clean a game as they possibly can.
Yeah, I'm with you on it. I think as a coaching staff, that's what you hope for. You know, discipline fouls, your kicking game, your punting game, your execution on the snap, holding the kick. You're going to have some missed tackles. You're going to have some missed assignments. You know, and I think that's the biggest thing is coaches being able to know, hey, look, kids, hey, look, sometimes you guys are going to physically get beat at the point of contact. That happens at every level. But just don't mentally or emotionally beat yourself. And if they can find that kind of maturity and that kind of groove with their kids, with the 11 on offense and 11 on defense, they're not worried about if a guy, hey, we score, great, put it away. Hey, they score, great, put it away. Just go to the next play. And I think the coaches that can really manage their players that way, you know, have probably the strongest team and the strongest mentality.
A lot of people looking ahead to the game in Texas. Aren't many tickets there, so people are going to be looking for things to do. How about heading to True Lodging RV Park right there in Hackberry, do a little fishing, a little hunting, whatever, and then watch the ball game on TV? Can you accommodate them?
I will accommodate anybody and everybody. There ain't no doubt about it. I'll even have a bus for you. Take them over to Bucks and Ducks and enjoy the game over at Bucks and Ducks and come on back to our place with fry some fish.
Huh. Count me in. Count me in.
You got it.
Chris, we'll see you next Wednesday, buddy. Thank you so much.
You got it, brother. Appreciate you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Chris Truax, former LSU lineman, coached all over. Coached at Northwestern and did a great job there. Great recruiter and now in the business world. That brought to you by True Lodging RV Park, Hackberry, Louisiana. I've never been. I'm going. I hear the hunting, the fishing out of this world. Out of this world. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one, set the stage for hour number two. Hump Day Edition, Jordy Helpert Show, Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
You're listening to the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
Oh, it wouldn't be a fun day if we didn't have something to say about Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal. Well, they've been going back and forth a little bit. It all started back on July 29th. When at a convention in Las Vegas, Kobe Bryant said he would have blanking 12 rings and that O'Neal would be the greatest had he spent more time in the gym. Here's the quote. He'd be the greatest of all time for sure, Bryant said. He'd be the first to tell you that. This guy was a force like I've never seen. It was crazy. Man, this dude was, he didn't care. He was mean. He was nasty. He was competitive. He was vindictive. Yeah, he was, I wish he was in the gym. I would have had 12 rings. Shaquille O'Neal chimed back twice. The first time saying, you would have had 12 if you passed the ball more, especially in the finals against the Pistons. Hashtag facts. And then O'Neal said, you don't get statues by not working hard. Bryant tweeted a clarifying remark saying, hey, nothing. There is no beef with Shaq. I know most media want to see it, but it ain't going to happen. Ain't nothing but love there, and we are too old to beef anyway. Hashtag threepeat. Shaq goes, it's all good, bro. When I saw the interview, I thought you were talking about Dwight Howard, right, who came in as Superman. Shaq was the real Superman. Is that how you spell his name? L-O-L. So Shaq and Kobe, that is one of the biggest travesties of all, that they could not coexist together. They were two alpha dogs that just could not exist. No telling how many they would have won. Would they have equaled what Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen did? They won back-to-back three-peats. The only reason why it was interrupted because Michael Jordan went to play baseball. If he hadn't, you know, tell it, he won eight in a row. Whatever. Shaq and Kobe, that's one of the bigger question marks in NBA history. How many, if they could have stayed together and existed, how many could they have won in a row? How many could they have won? So anyway, a little Shaq and Kobe, tete-a-tete via Twitter, but nothing but love for the two of them. And Kobe's right, too old to argue, too old. And Shaq's right, pass the daggum ball, of which Kobe said they were playing hack-a-shack. You weren't making free throws, so I'm going to shoot it every time, which he did. And if I miss, which he did a lot, Shaq, you rebound it and just dunk it. Two great players. Unbelievable. All right, hour number one, history. Come on back. Hour number two, the Jordy Helpert Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station. Hump Day!
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another. another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Holtberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Holtberg.
Hour number two of two. Away we go. Wednesday. Happy hump day to you and yours. It's August the 28th. Watching a little U.S. Open tennis, Roger Federer lost the first set again in Arthur Ashe Stadium, but he is getting ready to close out a four-setter. And Venus Williams holding on for dear life, but she's down a set and 5-3 in Louis Armstrong Stadium, just in case you're a tennis buff. We got a busy second hour planned for you and yours. John Hendricks will join us from Canal Street Chronicles and Forbes Sports to talk about the New Orleans Saints. Looks like Deontay Harris has scored a spot on the Saints 53-man roster. And then Michael Hugenin will join us, as always, on a Wednesday from The Athletic to talk about the biggest games in college football for week number one. But we do it every day at this time of day. Let's take our daily walk around the great sports water cooler of life. CD, button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, CD, good afternoon again, my friend. How are you, and what you got in store for us today?
I'm doing fantastic on a wonderful Wednesday, getting that much closer to the end of preseason, and of course, we're just getting ready for the start of college football season. Tomorrow is going to kind of get things jump-started off right, but we'll save that talk for mañana. Of course, I think we need to talk about what's causing all this around the world of college football. The biggest headline, Dylan Moses out indefinitely. Yeah. With an injury requiring surgery, probably going to wind up being out for the whole 2019 season. It's crazy to think how much the linebacker depth at that position has dwindled over the last few weeks.
Yeah, they have been subject to injury after injury. But Alabama recruits and recruits depth, and all of them are four or five stars. So maybe a little bit short on the experience side of things, but they'll learn quickly. Dylan Moses, of course, preseason All-American right there in LSU's backyard. Went to U-High and then to IMG Academy and signed up with Alabama. So I hate to see it happen. I really, truly do. I hope he gets a speedy recovery. The next time we see him, he'll probably be playing in the NFL.
Jumping over to the NFL for a minute, we got to bring up some more stuff that's coming out about the retirement. And this is apparently coming from CBS Sports' Brian DiArdo reporting that the Colts knew of Andrew Luck's retirement plan well before it leaked. And that seems crazy to think about. You say that you know they knew about what was going to happen before it happened, because it feels like maybe you would have done a little bit of damage control and put something out a little bit ahead of time just to avoid all the backlash that happened as that game was going on.
Welcome to the new world and the new age of media and social media. They were negotiating the buyout of his contract as early as last week. You can't sit on a story like that. Too many people are going to talk. So you got to get these things out ahead of time. And certainly, you know, they were going to wait and do it on Sunday, but big mistake on their part. Big mistake on their part. They should have done it sooner, got it out of the way, and then maybe some of those zealots out there in Indianapolis wouldn't have booed Andrew Luck.
I'd have to agree with you. Definitely, it's going to be amazing to see what happens over the next couple of years, because it feels like, you know, we've talked about a lot the last couple of days about Andrew Luck's retirement. You put that up there alongside some of the legendary retirements, or early retirements, yeah, I should say, like a Barry Sanders. But it makes you wonder with what's going on in the world of the NFL now that we know about the big CTE stories and concussions and whatnot. How often do you think this winds up keep happening where you see starting quarterbacks just say, hey, we're going to hang it up and not deal with all these injuries before they're 30? How long do you want to see? How much longer do you see that happening where it's just very consistently happening?
The money is so high. Look, his wife is expecting their first child. So I can't fault the guy. His quality of life has been jeopardized. And, you know, he wants to be able to play with his son or daughter, whatever. How often is it going to happen? I don't know. It's an individual case by case scenario. But, you know, they make a lot of money if they use their finances wisely. They're set for life. They don't have to fool with it. I mean, Jim Brown retired early. Barry Sanders, Megatron Johnson with the Detroit Lions, just to name a few that did so. So to each his own. I am, you know, that's why I'm for the players to get as much money as they can as quickly as they can. Health, I've learned, health is more important than anything. If you don't have health, you can't enjoy all the money that you make. You just can't. So health is everything.
It's absolutely crucial for these guys to kind of get things going and be able to stay healthy for the long term. And, you know, NFL isn't exactly ballet, but of course, I think we need to flip it on over. You talked about it at the end of the hour, might as well kind of get your thoughts on it. The Kobe Bryant, the tete-a-tete, it feels like everything is, the hatchet has been buried. So it's something just to kind of keep an eye on over the next several months to see what happens. Does Shaq wind up responding? But do you believe that there is no beef between Kobe and Shaquille?
I think so. I think they're beyond that and all that. I mean, I think they've moved on to their separate ways. Now, deep down inside, I'm sure Shaq and Kobe are wondering, man, why did we ever part ways? We could have set a legacy for years. There's no telling how many championships they could have won in a row the way they were going. They were the most dominating wingman and the most dominating presence down low ever combined. It was just ridiculous what they had. So maybe deep down inside, when they go to places where nobody else can talk, nobody else can listen, and they're in their deepest of thoughts, they may say that daggum Kobe, if he'd just passed the ball more, or Kobe saying about Shaq, if he'd gotten in the weight room or gotten on the court and gotten in the gym and gotten in better shape, maybe so. But you know, hey, it's history. It's over. We'll never know. But two great players, when they were at their peak together, man, that was the Lake Show was something else.
It was amazing. Probably one of the few times I actually actively rooted for the Lakers, largely because of Shaquille O'Neal. And you bring up the fact like they could have very well have won 12 rings. And you think about that.
Yeah.
How tough would that have been to be able to do that so consistently and really have a strangle? And how much would that have ruined the league? Because it felt like for a while the league was starting to keep that popularity going for a while. And then you kind of had that big boom once the big three became a thing. And now, like, you just can about imagine it just become the Lakers, 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 Lakers. That would wind up kind of causing the NBA's popularity to tank a little bit in my mind.
Every team everybody loves to root for a team or to root for or pull against a villain, and the Lakers would have been villains against the league. But let's make one thing perfectly clear: Kobe's crazy if he thinks he's going to win 12 titles. Hey, no way, that's never going to happen. It's too long. It's too much. No, but I seriously think they could have won 5 in a row, maybe 6 in a row in their prime. 12, there ain't no way on earth. No way. But I don't think it would have been bad for the league. No, just make everybody else step up and get better. So, but that we'll never know, right? We'll never know.
Exactly. That's going to be the big thing. But one of the things we know about all too well is what happened last night with Justin Verlander. Got ejected as he was walking back after double was allowed. Before that, he had a bad balk call. And then Justin Verlander let his emotions be felt. We can't air that because a lot of profanities were thrown out over the air. There was definitely a lot of things that were thrown out there that we can't say on the radio.
Ain't no telling what's going on in Justin Verlander's mind. Kate, you got to take better care of that man. He's got some pent-up anxiety or stress. Something's going on. They had the game well in hand. He was pitching just fine. You don't need to blow up and explode on something like that. That's crazy. Justin, you're better than that. Let it go. You're going to have this umpire again. You want to tick him off and get him to, I mean, come on. Right? I mean, he's better than that.
Exactly.
They had the game well in hand, CD. It's crazy.
Exactly. He had it well in hand, but I think the biggest thing with him is he's just frustrated with all these umpires. Just, it almost feels like they're targeting him to a certain extent, maybe in his mind.
Oh, yeah.
Now, mind
whatever.
You, Mind you, I feel like I think he's thinking about one guy in particular, and I feel like everybody hates this guy, Jordy. Angel Hernandez. I feel like he's like, like the Angel Hernandez conspiracy.
I mean, gee whiz. You know what they ought to do? They ought to let the umpires get on the pitching mound and put the pitchers with a bat in their hand, and let's see what happens then. How many pitchers do you think would have a ball thrown at their head? I mean, golly sakes alive. Justin, you're better than that. You don't need to blow. Hey, maybe he just wanted to come out the game. He'd had enough. I don't know. Who knows what's going on in their mind, right? Who knows?
Well, when you're whipping up on them like that, you can about imagine. And this kind of popped up. The four-letter network put out rankings of the top referees. We'll kind of get out on this one. Take a wild guess. Who is ranked number one?
Hockley
retired, Jordy. Bill Vinovich is number one on the list.
Bill Vinovich. Okay. Well, good for him. I still like Mindy Rudolph from back in the day with the NBA. Now, that was a referee, man. That was good stuff. Anyway, I don't know how they rank these guys. I mean, popularity contest, what? Who knows? But good for him. Good for him. Maybe he needs to get a new pay raise. That's your Hot Topics brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. Do yourself a flavor. Bring Cajun Chef with you wherever you go. It's the best hot sauce on the planet. Saints Talk next.
Who's got game and who's the next big thing at LSU? Jordy Hultberg will set you straight on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
And we are welcome back to the program. We are always interested in getting new voices involved in the show, and we're thrilled to bring on to the team John Hendricks, a contributor for Forbes Sports and the managing editor of the Saints Canal Street Chronicles. John, thanks so much for agreeing to join us, and we appreciate the time, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you bringing me on.
Absolutely. So, man, where do we start with the Saints? Man, they looked awfully good. The ones that are supposed to play good played really, really good, it looked like to me, in preseason game number three.
Yeah, look, I think that's what you want, right? Is you don't want to see your starters trot out there and have to play a whole half or play into the third quarter like we saw some of these teams do. And look, I think that was the best case scenario for them. You saw a good bit of what the defense had to offer. You had a good bit to see what that Drew Brees is. Hey, this isn't this washed up guy that everybody wants to say for like the fifth or sixth year in a row. And, you know, hits Michael Thomas in stride. He looks good. Kamara's doing his thing. Offensive line looks good. So, you know, it's refreshing to see that, hey, this team looks like they're going to pick up right where they left off and are primed to do this thing again. And, look, they're going to need it because coming out of the gate, they got a tough schedule. So, there's a lot to love about this season.
What do we even attempt to look at, if we even want to, against the Dolphins in this final preseason game? What's out there? What should we look for?
Well, look, I think there's still a lot to look at to this matchup because, I mean, look, you know, the reality is when you look at the Saints team, you've got probably 40 to 45 of the spots already spoken for on this team when it comes to the final roster projections. So, you know, with that, you've got your 53 that you got to set, plus your 10-man practice squad. So you're looking for those depth battles. You're looking at the wide receiver battle, who's going to distance themselves. You know, they got a lot to decisions to make behind Ted Ginn Jr. and Michael Thomas. So that's something you're going to take a look at. You're going to look at the secondary. You know, how many defensive backs do they roll with? Deontay Harris, I think he's got a spot on this team for a roster as far as their return duties. So that's something you want to take a look at, and kind of offensive line guys. So, I mean, you know, this is really about depth. It's not necessarily about, hey, this starter, that starter. It's all solidified in their depth.
John Hendricks, kind enough to join us. It's ironic that the Saints are taking on the Dolphins. There's an ex-Saint, current Dolphin, who hasn't won the favor of his coach. He's become a political type of liability, and that's Kenny Stills. He may be cut, and y'all addressed this on Canal Street Chronicles. If he is cut, should the Saints consider bringing Kenny Stills back into the fold as a wide receiver? What say you?
Well, look, I think this team has a lot of room for improvement on the wide receiver battle. So, I mean, look, yeah, if you're going to get upgrade that talent, why wouldn't you take a look? I mean, you know, they have people that speak out against different things. Demaryius Davis is somebody that comes to mind. And, look, I think if people can look past some of that stuff, and even so, I mean, he's doing off the field. You know, you worry about what he's doing on the field. Forget what happened years ago with the Saints. He's definitely a more mature person on this team. So if you can work out the numbers and you can get somebody that's going to fill in and give some production for you, then I say you got to take a look at it and at least do your due diligence.
Okay. John Hendricks joining us. Running back, Divine Ozigbo. Do you think he's on the 53-man roster?
Nick, I think he's a guy that's going to be showcased and featured a little bit more, obviously, in this preseason game coming up. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up cracking the roster. But at the same time, I feel Dwayne Washington has done enough and plenty, especially with his work on the special teams, to say, hey, I'm staying on the final squad as a third running back. So, look, I think he's a guy who's kind of hovers on the fence. He's had off and on preseason, had off and on moments in camp. So, look, it wouldn't surprise me if they keep him. But then again, you know, going back to last year, Sean Payton ran the squad where he was going to game day and only two running backs were active, and Washington might have been the odd man out. So, you know, I guess fans got to remember that, hey, even if you do make this squad, doesn't mean you're going to play on game day, and it doesn't mean your roster spot is solidified past week one.
Yeah. Sheldon Rankins took up a spot, didn't he? How surprised were you that they took him off the PUP list?
We've noticed him in camp some that was off to the side or doing some drills, doing some work. So that was encouraging, obviously, just to see him kind of looking and just being around. So obviously it'd be a little bit more concerning if he was never around the facility or anything like that. So, look, I think most everybody is encouraged by seeing him back on the practice field. Obviously, I don't think we're going to see him immediately. As Nick Underhill used to cover the Saints beat. Now, with the Athletic, he said that, you know, probably week four to week six is that target time frame. So, look, I think if they can hang in there in September and come out fine, Rankin is going to be a huge boost to this defense. They do have Malcolm Brown there. Taylor Stallworth is a guy that people forget about. So I think they'll be fine on the defensive line, especially Donnie Martin there. But Rankin is just another breed. I think he's somebody that they need back soon.
John Hendricks, Canal Street Chronicles, Forbes Sports, amongst the many things that he does. Sean Payton says the fourth preseason game matters in the grade. When he says that, what do you interpret from that?
Well, look, I think you're looking at shaping out that final roster, plus you're looking at the depth charts. And just a preseason, we like to think, oh, well, there's no reason to do that. Let's do away with that. Let's add another regular season game. But, you know, the reality is this is, since the NFL had done that roster cut down away with the 75-player limit, now you're going from 90 to 53, and almost 1,200 players are going to be out of a job. So, look, I mean, for some people, this is them putting it out and hanging out and throwing everything they got into this, and it'll show up.
Absolutely. John, do all the draft picks make it on this 53-man final roster?
It's going to be tough to say on that one. I don't think so. Alizé Mack, he was just set back on injuries. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if they put him on the, I guess, the quote-unquote redshirt IR list. Same thing with Saquon Hampton. Just going to be interesting to see. Obviously, you know Eric McCoy's got a spot on this roster. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson should be another guy that has a spot on this roster. Caden Ellis has done a lot. I think he's an absolute lock to make the roster. So, you know, the other two, we'll see what happens. But Mack and Hampton hitting injury and just not being able to do enough on the field for him and stay consistent is probably what's going to hurt their chances.
He is John Hendricks. He's kind enough to join us and will join us throughout the course of this football season each and every Wednesday to talk about the New Orleans Saints. So, we got the opener coming up on a Monday night. Houston's coming to the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. What is your biggest concern, if there is one, for this team before it heads into the opener?
Well, I'll tell you, it's just really showing everybody that they're picking up where they left off. I mean, you know, you're going to have a tough test on your hand with Deshaun Watson, you know, they did show have a big blow suffered with losing Lamar Miller. And DeAndre Hopkins is just incredible. So that's a real tough for that, a tough test for that secondary. You know, I think ultimately is, hey, this is the first game you have, first chance to make a statement. Monday Night Football, first of two doubleheaders ever since that silly no call that happened in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. So, I mean, look, you got a lot to prove there, and I just want them to come out and start on the right foot. And really, I'd love for them to go on a tear and kick people in the teeth, because I think that's what they need to do to say, hey, this is a team that's not fazed by this silly craziness that happened last
year. What happened last year is last year. This is a new year. What's your prediction? 16 games. Well, what's a doable number in your mind?
Well, look, I know most people want to say, hey, it's going to be another 13-win season or, you know, 14. Well, let's go undefeated. Ooh. But, look, I think realistically, you know, you're going to have Atlanta be better. You're going to supposedly have Carolina be better. It depends on Cam Newton. You don't know what you have with Bruce Arians and the Buccaneers. I gave them 11 wins. I think they should repeat and win the division again. But it all just depends how fit the chips fall in the later part. I think the best case for them is they can get on a good run, even if they don't have a good September, and just really be able to control their own destiny. I think that's going to spell all the difference in the world. But you know, there's some opponents down the line that could pose a challenge, and you just don't know what you're going to get. But I think 11-5 is a safe route.
There you go. Is that enough to win the division?
Yeah, absolutely, especially with the competition that they've had. I mean, okay, you know, I would be surprised if 11 games didn't win the division for sure.
All right, sounds great to me. Next week we get to actually, you know, we talk about the 53-man roster, and we'll get to preview the Monday night extravaganza. The Dome's going to be just nuts for that one. Can't wait. Can't wait to talk to you again, John. Have a great rest of your week, great Labor Day holiday weekend, and we always will look forward to your Wednesday visits with us. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you having me. Thanks so much.
All right, there you go. John Hendricks joining us. We'll switch now from the pro game to the college game. It's Hump Day with Huguenin, Michael Huguenin of The Athletic, next on the Jordy Helpert Show, brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets, over 60 in southern and central Louisiana. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, man, I'm telling you, you can't shop right anywhere at all. We'll be right back.
Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines in college football this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump Day!
All right, celebrating a year now at The Athletic, our good friend Michael Huguenin, kind enough to join us. Man, that Athletic thing has blown the roof off of stuff, buddy. I mean, how are you?
Yeah, doing well. Yeah, and The Athletic is it's pretty good journalism, an understatement. It's a fun place to work, and this is a great time of the year for any sports fan because football's back. The NFL starts next week. We're getting close to the baseball playoffs. We're getting close to the start of the NHL and NBA preseason camps. So, and the most important thing, obviously, college football is back. Two games last week, and both were entertaining in their own way. And obviously, tomorrow night, a heck of a lot of games tomorrow night, a handful on Friday, and we got games Saturday, Sunday, and even Monday. So this is, long as Hurricane Dorian doesn't hit Florida, I'm going to be a happy guy.
I am with you. Prayers and fingers crossed that it goes by the wayside. You said college football is back. Are we sure? Did we really see college football in Orlando? Wow! Turnovers, missed tackles, and the puzzled look of one Steve Spurrier.
Yeah, Florida played poorly and won, and I think Florida's defense obviously did the job. Florida lost four turnovers. And yet, the Florida defense allowed only 3 points off those turnovers. Florida got one turnover and turned it into a touchdown. So, I thought Florida's defensive coaches
frankly, thoroughly outcoached Miami's offensive coaches. When your starting offensive tackles are a redshirt freshman and a true freshman, I think I would give them some help. Roll the quarterback out. Do some chip blocks. Do some double team blocks. And for the most part, Jaren Williams was sort of left on his own, and Florida sacked him 10 times. So Florida's defense definitely stood up. Sleepy Franks, a one-time LSU commitment, made a couple nice throws. He also made a couple bonehead mistakes. But I think the key factor is Florida won the game despite playing a pretty sloppy outing.
I'm with you. The big news of the day coming from Tuscaloosa, four players apparently would be suspended for the first half against Duke. Not that that matters. Running backs Najee Harris and Brian Robinson, Louisiana receiver Devontae Smith, linebacker Terrell Lewis, but more importantly, Dylan Moses, the kid that went to U High right in LSU's backyard, who said he was going to come to LSU if Les Miles was still the coach. He goes to Alabama, preseason All-American, tears his ACL, in all likelihood done for the season.
Yeah, that's a big loss. Because this is an established, high-level player who's going to miss the season. And it's not going to matter Saturday against Duke. It's frankly not going to matter, I would argue, for half the games on their schedule. But you lose a guy like Moses, and it weakens you, because not only is the guy talented, he's a good player who makes a lot of tackles, been in that defense for a long time, so he understands what he's supposed to do. And now a guy who probably, whoever's backup was, a guy who's probably going to get 15 plays a game, now gets 50. And then the guy behind him, who may not have played at all, now all of a sudden is getting 10 to 15 plays a game. So there's a domino effect with any injury to a key player. You're losing a guy who's extremely talented. His backup might not, well, we know his backup isn't as talented. Plus, frankly, he might not be ready for that kind of workload. So that loss is a big one for Alabama. It'd be like last year if, before the season started, LSU lost Devin White. I'm not saying Dylan Moses
Correct.
Is as good as Devin White, but he is that important to Alabama's defense. And yes, Alabama's extremely talented, but again, like you pointed out, preseason All-American, you lose him 3 days before the opening game. That doesn't give you a lot of time to plan. You know, it's one thing if he gets injured in spring ball or even in preseason camp, but camp's over. Basically, just game week preparations. He blows out his knee, and that's a big loss for the Tide.
You just never know in football. Michael Hugan of The Athletic. Let's get to some of the games now. Coming up on Thursday, we got a couple of good ones. Georgia Tech at number one Clemson. It's very, very hard to repeat. Clemson doesn't play anybody in the regular season. Can they go back-to-back undefeated seasons yet again?
Oh, yeah, I think so. That offense, I think, will be better than it was last year, mainly because Trevor Lawrence and that receiving corps is a year older. I mean, Trevor Lawrence last year was a freshman, and he looked extremely good down the stretch. I think he's going to look extremely good all season. The concern for Clemson, the defense, is not going to be as good. I don't care what happens. You can't lose five defensive linemen, all drafted, and three in the first round. You can't lose that kind of talent and be as good. So the defensive unit, I think, is going to have some problems this year. The flip side, obviously, is I can't imagine anybody basically outscoring Clemson. So I think Clemson's in good shape, and that game, the opening game, is interesting, obviously, for also because of Georgia Tech. This is going to be a Georgia Tech team that, for the first time in 14 years, gets on the field and doesn't run the triple option. So it's going to be sort of weird to see that. So I think Clemson rolls in this game, but it will be interesting to see how sharp Trevor Lawrence is in the opening game, what kind of pass rush pressure Clemson can apply, and frankly, how effective the Georgia Tech offense is with a whole new scheme.
The game that I'm really looking forward to watching, going to have to stay up late, but number 14, Utah at BYU. Utah is the popular pick to play in the Rose Bowl for the first time in program history. And even though this isn't a conference game, rival BYU could upset the narrative that the Utes are a dark horse national title contender.
Yeah, this is, If you live in the Southeast, this is a exceedingly nasty rivalry. There are religious overtones, and in these schools, there's tons of animosity. There's going to be a lot of chippiness, and I think if fans watch, you're going to see, I think, a couple personal fouls. It's going to be nasty. Utah is an interesting team. 15 starters back, really good along both lines. Kyle Whittingham is a really high-level coach. He preaches physicality. Utah has a new offensive coordinator, Andy Ludwig, who had been at Vanderbilt the past couple seasons. He's got a nice quarterback-running back combination in Tyler Huntley and Zach Moss, two kids who are from South Florida. They were brought to Utah by Dennis Erickson because Dennis Erickson used to be an offensive assistant. Erickson's retired now, but those guys are still there. This Utah team, I think, will win at least 10 games. I think they're going to beat BYU by two touchdowns. I think Utah is really that good, but that is a really intriguing game because of the intensity of the rivalry. That to me is the best game on Thursday, even though I think it's going to end up being a two-touchdown game.
I'm with you. Michael Hugan in The Athletic. Number 19, Wisconsin at South Florida, tentatively set for Friday night. Wisconsin started the 2018 season ranked number 4, but boy, they disappointed at 8-5 overall, even with Jonathan Taylor winning the Doak Walker Award. Is Wisconsin going to be back in the narrative of things?
I think they got a chance to win the Big Ten West, but you look at Wisconsin, this is not a national title team, not a Big Ten, I don't think a legit Big Ten title contender. New quarterback, Jack Cohn, the last year's starter, Alex Hornibrook's now the backup at Florida State, left as a grad transfer, and you know what you're getting with Wisconsin. You're right, Jonathan Taylor last year ran for 2,000 yards, and you knew he was getting the ball because Wisconsin's passing attack was inept.
Yeah.
Absolutely inept. If you're an LSU fan, you're used to inept passing attacks. Three times worse than any LSU passing attack in the last decade. That's how bad Wisconsin was throwing the ball. Jonathan Taylor is a legit stud running back. And as usual, Wisconsin has a bunch of gigantic dudes up front who are phenomenal run blockers. So Jonathan Taylor is going to have a big game. USF is sort of a mystery team in the AAC. The last year they underachieved, I would argue, relative to their talent level. Their offensive coordinator left, Sterling Gilbert, who's now the head coach of McNeese State. And a lot of folks at USF were not sorry to see him leave. I would argue he did not really take advantage of his talent. So this is going to be then the new offensive coordinator at USF is Kerwin Bell, the former Florida quarterback from the 80s. He has been the head coach of Valdosta State, and they won the National Division II title last year. They're going to be a much more efficient passing team this year because Bell loves to throw the ball. Wisconsin's a better team. USF, though, the one thing last week at game time for Miami in Florida, it was about 85 degrees on the field. It was low, around 101, feel-like temperature because the humidity was so high. The thing with those two teams, they both practice in it and are used to it. Wisconsin ain't used to that kind of heat. So the longer this game remains close Friday, the more chance USF has of pulling the upset. Now, again, I don't think USF can do it because I don't think that much of their defense, but that's something to watch because the heat is going to be brutal Friday night for Wisconsin.
Yeah. Michael Hugan in The Athletic, two Group of Five schools with an opportunity to make a big statement early. Boise State taking on Florida State in Jacksonville Saturday night. And Fresno State is at USC for the late night Saturday night game. Which team has a better chance of pulling off a win?
I think we could also throw Memphis in there because they're playing Ole Miss, and the game's in Memphis at the Liberty Bowl.
I think Boise State...
They're starting a true freshman quarterback, Hank Batchmeyer, a kid from the L.A. area, highest-ranked recruit in Boise State history. Talented quarterback. FSU is more talented top to bottom, unquestionably. The concern for FSU remains their offensive line. And if you watched them play last year, you saw an offensive line that frankly left you, oh, my goodness, I can't watch anymore. I might go blind. These guys are so bad. And... The bad thing about FSU is their two best offensive linemen from last year, two guys who expected to be back, are gone. Landon Dickerson transferred to Alabama. Cole Minshew, a guard, has a neck problem, may never play football again. So the offensive line is a gigantic concern again. And everybody knows if you can't block anybody, you ain't throwing the ball, you're not running the ball. So that's where Boise needs to make hay. They have to get a legit pass rush. They need to muck up things at the line of scrimmage. I think FSU wins because I think they can mess with the Batchmeyer kid, the Boise State quarterback, making his first start. He didn't even get on campus until July. So he's done a really good job in a short time. But it is a fascinating game. I think Boise has a legit chance. I think Memphis can beat Ole Miss. And Fresno USC, you're right. I mean, the last game of the day, extremely interesting because of Clay Helton's job status. Unquestionably the coach on the hottest seat going into the season. A lot of folks are wondering, why didn't they fire him last year? I'll be honest, if this game is close Saturday night, you're going to have people, okay, he should have been fired, and God forbid if I'm Clay Helton on Saturday and I lose to Fresno. So Fresno State is an extremely well-coached team. Jeff Tedford breaking in a new quarterback, though, a quarterback with not much experience. They got some good running backs. They have an interesting receiving core, good line play, fundamentally sound team, and USC has gone to the air raid offense. They brought in Graham Harrell, the former Texas Tech quarterback who spent the last couple years at North Texas. They're going to throw the heck out of the ball, and they have really good receivers. So I think USC wins, but in Memphis, Ole Miss, Boise State, FSU, and Fresno, USC, all three of those group of five teams have a legit chance to pull a major upset.
Yeah. I mean, if USC doesn't win this one, then they've got to go Stanford, BYU, Utah, Washington, Notre Dame in its next five.
Yeah.
Oh, good luck, Clay Helton.
Yes. If they lose Saturday night, I think you can go ahead and say, okay, Clay Helton's going to be fired before the end of September, which means all the speculation will center on Urban Meyer, who coincidentally will be spending his Saturdays in L.A. in the Fox Sports TV studios as a college football analyst.
Oh, it's inevitable. Yeah, no question. All right, Mike. We all believe LSU is going to take care of business against Georgia Southern. Everybody thinks Mississippi State's going to beat the Raging Cajuns of UL. The biggest game of the weekend, two top 25 ranked teams in Arlington Saturday evening, number 11 Oregon versus number 16 Auburn. If you go by quarterback play, Justin Herbert, he is predicted to be one of the top quarterbacks picked in the draft. Auburn going with a freshman quarterback. From there, where do we go?
Yeah, this is a huge game. You're right. And there's a lot of pressure on Auburn, no question. Gus Malzahn also on the hot seat. You got Bo Nix as a starting quarterback. True freshman making his first college start. There's pressure there. There's pressure in that, okay, your dad, Patrick Nix, was a pretty good Auburn quarterback in the 90s. Adds more pressure to Bo. And, oh, by the way, Mr. Nix, your job this year is to win enough games so your coach doesn't get fired. And I will argue that's a ton of pressure on an 18-year-old kid. There's more on Herbert and Oregon. Herbert, for all the praise he has received, for all the projections of him as a potentially top 10 pick in the 2020 draft, he has one marquee win in his career, and that's last year at Washington when Oregon won in overtime because of their running game. So Mr. Herbert has a lot to prove. Oregon, in a way, also is sort of carrying the water this weekend for the Pac-12 because Oregon is, as you pointed out, preseason top 15, expected to pick to win the league by the media, and they're playing an Auburn team that, for the most part, picked third or fourth in the SEC West. So you have the supposed best team in the Pac-12 playing a supposed middle-of-the-pack team from the SEC. So if Auburn were to win, I think the national perspective on the Pac-12 is going to be, man, that league is not good again. We don't even need to worry about him anymore. Right. So there's a ton of pressure on Oregon. Mario Cristobal, the Oregon coach, obviously has played against Auburn before because he's a former Alabama assistant. The Oregon offensive line is tremendous, but so is the Auburn defensive line. So Herbert, if he has time to throw, better be on point. I think this is a fascinating game. I think Oregon's going to win. Would not be surprised if Auburn wins, because I think if Auburn shuts down the run, it will be interesting to see what kind of game Herbert has. He's going to have to play extremely well for that to happen. You also wonder what Bo Nix is going to do in his first start. He threw three picks in a scrimmage a couple weeks ago. Throw three picks in a scrimmage, nobody cares. Throw three picks in a game? Yeah, people start caring. Yeah. So, yeah. Fascinating game on a bunch of levels. Again, though, I think Oregon is going to beat Auburn.
Anybody that's upset alert? Anybody, any underdog that you really think, other than maybe Memphis and Ole Miss? Well, I guess who's favored in that game? Just out of curiosity.
I haven't even looked at the line on that one. Virginia Pitt is a very interesting game in the ACC, because I think Virginia is the best team in that division. Pitt's a defending champ in that division. Okay. That's a huge first week game in the ACC. You got UCLA playing at Cincinnati on Thursday night. Last year, Cincinnati went west and beat Brian Kelly's team. How much better is Kelly's team this year? And then Sunday night, very interesting game, Houston playing Oklahoma. You got Jalen Hurts.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Jalen Hurts making his Oklahoma debut. Interestingly enough, the Houston quarterback's a kid named De'Aaron King, who is also from the Houston area like Jalen Hurts. And, oh, by the way, De'Aaron King's team beat Jalen Hurts' team in the Texas State playoffs, and that ended Jalen Hurts' high school career. So there's some, you know, there's some revenge factor for Hurts a teeny bit. But I'm extremely interested to see how the Oklahoma offense, rather, has been tweaked to take advantage of Hurts' legs, because my presumption is he will be asked to run 10 to 15 times a game.
He is Michael Hugenin. He knows something about every team that plays college football in America. You are absolutely amazing. Congrats on your one-year anniversary at The Athletic, and thank you for being with us for I don't know how long, but we ain't letting you go, buddy. So thank you.
All right, talk to you guys next week. Thanks a lot, man.
All right, Michael Hugenin of The Athletic. Back to close things up next.
Hey, this is Seamus.
I'm Cesaro.
And you're listening to 103.7 The Game.
Imagine a job, no, a career where your opinion matters.
Yeah, can I have your help with this?
It's one thing, it's really important.
And the harder you worked, the more money you could make. What if you could become an expert on traditional media,
digital media,
social media? If you don't like where you're working now, then why aren't you working here? We have an entire group of radio and television stations, and we're looking for account executives to work with our clients, helping them develop new ideas. You could be their go-to marketing person, a person that everyone relies on.
Yeah, can I have your help with this?
Can you help me with this?
Imagine having a job where every day at work is different. Imagine having a say in your destiny, your career, your income. Want to find out more? Visit DeltaMediaCorp.com. That's DeltaMediaCorp.com, and click Job Openings. Or call Shanae at 337-886-4669. That's 337-886-4669. Delta Media Corporation is an equal opportunity employer.
Where we shop, where we eat and have fun, all of it makes our community home. Let's celebrate it. Shop local. Shop certified South Louisiana.
Schedule your next photo session with Light Rider Photography for quality images you are guaranteed to love. For the best in senior and family portraits, commercial headshots, event photography, and photo restoration, find them online at lightriderphoto.com.
Atchafalaya Gold Casino is the talk of the town. If you're ready to win, our machines are ready to pay. We're always working to provide the best experience for all our customers. Will you be our next big winner? Atchafalaya Gold Casino, exit 115 in Henderson.
When you need an electrician, you want someone fair, dependable, on time, and thorough. And Mr. Electric is exactly who you're looking for. Our technicians deliver honest, upfront pricing, quality service, and one of the best warranties in the business. Call Mr. Electric or visit MrElectric.com/Lafayette.
Shop local. Shop certified South Louisiana.
At Cajun Chef, we only use the finest products, like our pickled okra and spicy pickled green beans, seasoned with our special Cajun flavor. It's so great for that special Bloody Mary. For you pepper lovers, Cajun Chef has the right kind of jalapeno peppers with just the right amount of spiciness, and it's excellent to pair with some nachos. A little dab of their signature hot sauce can make any meal amazing. Why not try Cajun Chef? When you do, you'll agree Cajun Chef is not just deliciously different, it's decidedly better. Cajun Chef.
Have you ever dreamed of taking down the blonde bomber Jordy Hultberg in fantasy football? Well, now is your chance to make that dream a reality by signing up for the 1037 The Game Fantasy Football League for the Jordy Hultberg Show. Just call 337-706-0111 and give us your name and contact info, and we will sign you up. The league is free, and you can then join us on Wednesday, September 4th for a draft party with the man himself at Twin Peaks on Johnston. Spots are filling up as we speak, so don't hesitate and sign up now.
Finishing touches to this Wednesday edition brought to you by DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Clean restrooms and a true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. Best cheeseburger anywhere. DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. It was a very interesting day in baseball. On this day, August 28th, the year 1977. It was the Texas Rangers versus the New York Yankees. For the Rangers, Nolan Ryan on the mound. For the Yankees, Louisiana Lightning, Ron Guidry. Ryan struck out 300 batters on this day for the fifth straight year. And old Ron Guidry, the Yankees faced just 28 men, and his Yankees beat Ryan's Rangers 1-0. How about that for a pitching duel? Would you pay a ticket to see that game? I sure as heck would. On this day, August 28th, the year 1977. If it's your birthday today, happy birthday. You share it with some singers. 37 years old, Leanne Rimes. And happy 54th birthday, Shania Twain. Special thanks to our guest today, Michael Johnson, talking nutritious food. In the Trenches with Chris Truax, Saints with John Hendricks, and nobody better talking football than Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. CD, job well done. We've got Astros baseball tomorrow, so we'll be back on Friday for our Football Friday edition. So please, stay tuned. We only have one of these Wednesdays, so have a great afternoon, rest of your evening, and we'll be back on Friday. Yeah. So until then, I'm Jordy Hultberg. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.